听力课堂，听 class.com.
Unit 12, Review. Activity 1, Weather Forecast. A. Listen to the weather forecast. Supply the missing information.
Now let's take a quick look around Wednesday's world weather map. Mexico City, mostly cloudy, warm, and a high of 26. Buenos Aires, sunny.A high of 17. La Paz, partly sunny, pleasant, 17 degrees. In Kingston, Jamaica, periods of clouds and sunshine. Windy, very humid, 32. Algiers, sunny and breezy, 30. Abidjan, potentially severe thunderstorms, 26. Cape Town, partly sunny, 19. Dallas, partly sunny, 29.Nairobi, partly sunny, 23. Cairo, sunny, hot and humid, 36. Jerusalem, sunny and windy, a high of 30. Tehran, mostly sunny, 37 degrees. In Berlin, partly sunny, hot and humid, 32. London, partly sunny, a pleasant day, 25. Belgrade, sunny and hot, 33. And in Moscow, rainy,Breezy and cool. 13. The world's weather.
B. Now try this. Listen to a more authentic version of the weather forecast.
Now let's take a quick run around Wednesday's world weather map. Mexico City, mostly cloudy, warm, a high of 26. Buenos Aires, sunny, a high of 17.La Paz, partly sunny, pleasant, 17 degrees. In Kingston, Jamaica, periods of clouds and sunshine, windy, very humid, 32. Algiers, sunny and breezy, 30. Abidjan, potentially severe thunderstorms, 26. Cape Town, partly sunny, 19. Dallas, partly sunny, 29. Nairobi, partly sunny, 23. Cairo, sunny, hot and humid, 36.Jerusalem, sunny and windy, a high of 30. Tehran, mostly sunny, 37 degrees. In Berlin, partly sunny, hot and humid, 32. London, partly sunny, a pleasant day, 25. Belgrade, sunny and hot, 33. And in Moscow, rainy, breezy and cool, 13. The world's weather.
Activity 2, National Geographic Society.The following passage is about the National Geographic Society. Supply the missing words while listening.
The National Geographic Society began 109 years ago. In January 1888, 33 men gathered at a social club in Washington. The group included scientists, explorers,military officers, and teachers. Most of them had traveled widely. They were excited about new discoveries, and they believed in the importance of geography, the study of the earth. All of them believed in the idea that travel helps people understand their world and other cultures. So they established...The National Geographic Society. The headquarters of the National Geographic Explorers Hall is filled with exhibits that use modern technology to explain the world and its environment.
Explorers Hall has more than the traditional kinds of museum exhibits where visitors look at objects behind glass. It has things for visitors to do. For example, there are television screens showing video pictures. But you do not just watch them. You interact with the program by touching the screen to answer questions, for example. One of the interactive exhibits is an international weather report. It tells the current weather for all areas of the world. You touch a television screen to see information about the area you are interested in. You can find out the temperature and rainfall, and you can see satellite pictures of weather conditions in the area.
Several exhibits at the National Geographic include remote-controlled microscopes. You move the microscopes from a distance. Then you see through them for a close look. These exhibits are among the most popular with students. As you walk through Explorers Hall, you can hear visitors calling to each other, "Come here! Look at this!" Such excitement about geography is the purpose of Explorers Hall. Using the tools of modern technology, such as satellite pictures and robot microscopes, make the subject of geography come alive.
Since 1890, the National Geographic Society has supported more than 5,500 explorations and research projects. In 1985, researchers supported by the Society found the British passenger ship Titanic on the bottom of the Atlantic Ocean.
The Society's Committee for Research and Exploration spends more than $4 million a year. It gives money to scientists working in subjects from archaeology to zoology. Its support increasingly goes to research that helps protect the Earth's natural resources. This includes studies of different kinds of plants and animals that are in danger of dying out.
The official record of the Society. A magazine called National Geographic is sent around the world every month to more than 9 million members of National Geographic. Through the years, the Society has added new ways to spread information to the public. It continues to expand through television programs, books, maps, movies, and other educational materials. The educational tools used by the National Geographic Society have changed in the past 100 years. Yet, the Society's goal remains the same. It works to increase knowledge and help people understand the complex nature of the world we share.
Activity 3, Environmental Issues. Listen to the interview. Complete the outline.
About big international issues, what do you see as the most important environmental issues of the moment?
It's quite difficult to make a kind of hierarchy of worry here, because so many issues are there, and they're all very, very important. But I think it has to be said that as far as we're concerned as a campaigning organisation, it really is the rainforest that we are concentrating on most. If we don't take action on that issue within the next 5 years, then environmental pressure groups won't have anything to do in 10 years' time, because there won't be any rainforest really for them to campaign about. So this is a critical period for the rainforest, the next 5 years, and there is enough flexibility in the system to allow us to hope that we're going to be able to make some changes during that time. So that's why we've made it our priority.
What's so important about the rainforest then? What's the difference between having them or not having them? Isn't it just, you know, basically either there's a lot of trees there or there aren't a lot of trees there?
Well, that's what some people would like to think. There, it's important in many different ways. Important firstly for the countries themselves, in terms of the fact that millions of people depend on the rainforest for their livelihood and for the quality of their environment through the protection of watersheds and so on. Secondly, they're important because of the biological richness of the rainforest, a genetic treasure chest is how they've been described. More than 60% of the world's species are to be found in the rainforest. Write that off, and you write off that genetic storehouse. lastly, they're important at an international level because of the impact on climatic patterns that one would find if the rainforests were destroyed. So whether you're looking closely at the tribal people who depend on them, the countries which depend on them, the international community which depends on them, indeed the creatures themselves, it's actually the most critical issue that we face. And our prime job is, of course, to try and get people to understand how it is, even in countries where there are no rainforests, that they still have a connection with the rainforest.
Activity 4. Learning a language in another country. Listen to a radio broadcast by a foreign journalist in Japan talking about some of his experiences there. Complete the flow diagram.
Language is taken for granted, unless, of course, you're trying to learn one that isn't your own. Commentator James Fallows has discovered that living in another country can create barriers to communication that are limiting in some ways and liberating in others.
Right now, you're listening to the radio, but I bet you're doing something else, too. Getting dressed, finishing your breakfast, leafing through the paper, driving to work. That is, you're enjoying the luxury of operating in your own familiar language, which your brain can handle so easily that it has plenty of power left to supervise the other things that you do. Here in Japan, I've been in exile from that comfortable world. If I want to make any sense whatever of the sounds coming out of the radio, the TV speaker, or someone else's mouth, I have to concentrate my complete attention on that task. There's no brain power to spare for anything else, including walking or chewing gum. I've become a man who can do exactly one thing at a time. This predicament has its good and bad sides. The bad part is a certain narrowing, to put it mildly, of the information flowing into my life. You take in information as if you were drinking from a big beer stein. For me, it's like sucking through a tiny clogged straw. But the good part is the same enforced need to concentrate. I may do only one thing at a time now, but I do that thing very intently. One of the things I've begun doing most seriously is to read books all the way through. Of course, we all read books in America, too, but precisely because of the other distractions, it's often hard to stick with them. Reviews, excerpts, TV interviews take the place of actual books.
Activity 5. Quiz game. A. Listen to the following radio quiz game. Who are those people in the panel? Supply the missing information.
Radio Bristol.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's time for Alive or Dead, our exciting quiz game about famous people alive or dead. Before I tell you the rules, let's meet our panel for tonight. From right to left, we have that famous sportsman and racing driver, Tim Brown.
Evening, everyone.
Next to Tim is that lovely star of the American cinema, who is now here in Bristol at the Opera House, Maxine Morgan.
Hi there.
Next, we have novelist David Walker.
Good evening.
And last but not least, composer and singer Laura Dennison.
Hello.
So let's get with the game. I have the name of a famous person, alive or dead, in this envelope. The panel will try to guess who it is. But they can only ask questions which have a yes or no answer. Are we ready?
Well, yes. Are you alive?
No, I'm not. Now, Maxine, let's have your question.
You're not alive. So you are a famous person who is dead. Oh, I know. Are you a person in a book? A fictional character? Somebody who isn't real?
No, I'm not fictional. David, can we have your question?
So you're a real dead person?
That's right, I am.
Good. Now we want to know where you come from. Are you British?
No, I'm not British.
Are you from Europe?
No, I'm not.
Are you Australian?
No, Tim, I'm not. I'm not Australian.
Oh, then I know. You're American.
You're a real American person, but you're dead. Now, let me think. Ah, yes. Are you a writer of any sort?
No, I'm not.
Are you anything to do with peace? You know, someone like Martin Luther King?
A good guess, Laura, but I'm nothing to do with peace. Well, that's a difficult one, really. I think the answer is half yes and half no. No, I'll say no.
Funny. Half yes, half no, but finally no. Well, are you famous as an entertainer of any sort? You know, a film star or pop singer or an actor? You know what I mean?
Ask one question at a time, Tim, please. The answer to your question is no.
I've got it. I've got the answer. I know. I'm right.
Careful now, Maxine. Say the wrong answer and I win the game. Are you sure you know who I am?
Yes. You're dead. You're famous. You're American. You are sort of famous for peace work. You're not an entertainer. You're not an American film star. I don't think you were famous as a soldier. I think you were a politician. I think you died in 1963. I think you were married to a very beautiful woman.
I think you're very close, Maxine. I think you are almost there.
I think you once went to Berlin. I think you are President John Kennedy, President of the United States of America.
And congratulations to you and the panel, Maxine. Yes, you are right. The name of the famous person in my envelope is President Kennedy, born in 1917 and died in 1963, on November 22nd to be exact. Now for my next famous person.
B. Now listen again. Put a mark beside each question. Put a tick if it is true. If it is false, put a cross. Finally, write down who that person is. Activity 6. Differences between American education and British education. Listen to Mike comparing American education with British education. Supply the missing information.
Mike was educated in the United States.
I think the main difference between the way we educate children the way you do here is that our education is so much broader. It's not nearly so deep. I mean, A-levels in English schools are more or less equivalent to first-year university in the States. Mm-hmm. Similar kind of thoroughness and depth. But most people who do A-levels here take three. Three is good and four is exceptional. Mm-hmm. Whereas in my senior year in high school, I had seven different subjects. Not all of which I studied to a great depth, but I had, for instance, to do physical education. I had, for instance, to take some kind of social studies. Mm. I had to do some kind of mathematics, which was my particular thing, but everybody had to do mathematics. If you couldn't do calculus, you could do arithmetic, even in the highest, your last year in high school. So we all had a very broad education. It's true that in America, the quality of the education varies tremendously, not only from state to state, but from county to county within states. I mean, you may have a very good high school in one town. The next town is short of funds as ever. It's like here or anywhere else. Mm-hmm. The main thing is lack of funds. Mm-hmm. But I think the thing I got most out of my education was the different viewpoints of people from all over the country.
Activity 7, Disaster. A. Listen to the following report. Supply the information.
Offers of assistance have begun pouring in to Bangladesh from around the world in the wake of Monday's cyclone. The storm is being described as the worst disaster in the country's history. Officials fear the cyclone death toll may exceed 100,000. Bangladesh Relief Minister Lutfar Akmankang launched a worldwide appeal Thursday for 20 helicopters to ferry relief supplies to hundreds of thousands of people stranded by the cyclone that hit the country's southeastern coast this week. He estimated it would cost at least $15 million to provide food, water, and shelter to survivors of the storm and to combat the expected epidemic of waterborne diseases. As he spoke, aid donations were being made in capitals around the globe. Among them, the European Community pledged $12 million in food and medical supplies. Saudi Arabia said three plane loads of goods were on the way. India announced it was sending $700,000 in aid and three helicopters for use in relief operations. The United States earlier delivered $2 million in medical supplies and said more would be made available. Three teams from the British charity Oxfam have also joined the relief operation. They're lifting food and water purification tablets to the port of Chittagong, Bangladesh's second largest city.
see. Now try this. Listen to a more authentic version of the report.
Offers of assistance have begun pouring in to Bangladesh from around the world in the wake of Monday's cyclone. The storm is being described as the worst disaster in the country's history. Officials fear the cyclone death toll may exceed 100,000.
Bangladesh Relief Minister Lutfar Rahman Khan launched a worldwide appeal Thursday for 20 helicopters to ferry relief supplies to hundreds of thousands of people stranded by the cyclone that hit the country's southeastern coast this week. He estimated it would cost at least $50 million to provide food, water, and shelter to survivors of the storm and to combat the expected epidemic of waterborne diseases. As he spoke, aid donations were being made in capitals around the globe. Among them, the European community pledged $12 million in food and medical supplies. Saudi Arabia said 3 plane loads of goods were on the way. India announced it was sending $700,000 in aid and 3 helicopters for use in relief operations. The United States earlier delivered $2 million in medical supplies and said more would be made available. 3 teams from the British charity Oxfam have also joined the relief operation, airlifting food and water purification tablets to the port of Chittagong, Bangladesh's second largest city.
Activity 8, the hottest year. Listen to the report. Complete the outline.
Scientists have declared 1998 the hottest year on Earth since detailed weather records were first kept. The World Meteorological Organization says the average surface temperature worldwide was about 14 degrees Celsius. The UN agency says that is almost 7/10 of 1 degree Celsius higher than temperatures at the end of the 19th century. And it says the average temperature last year was more than 0.5 degree Celsius above the average temperature between 1961 and 1990. Peter Schofield is the head of the World Climate Program at the World Meteorological Organization. He says new temperature records were set each month during the 18-month period ending in October. He says scientists are surprised at the size of the temperature increase. Mr. Schofield says there have been sharp increases in world temperatures during the 1990s. Above normal temperatures have been recorded during the past 20 years. Officials of the World Meteorological Organization say almost all land areas have had above average temperatures. 2 exceptions are the northern parts of Europe and Asia. Mr. Schofield noted that a number of unusual weather events happened in 1998. They include a severe storm season in the North Atlantic Ocean, flooding in China, and extreme heat in parts of India, Saudi Arabia, and areas along the Mediterranean Sea. The UN agency reports that April through June last year was the driest period in parts of the southern United States in 104 years. Also, last February was the warmest period in many parts of France and Britain for more than 100 years. Mr. Schofield says scientists expect surface temperatures on Earth to rise by 2 degrees Celsius during the next 100 years. He says the increase in temperatures will cause ice in Antarctica and near the Arctic Circle to melt and oceans to be warmer. Mr. Schofield says scientists estimate that sea levels will have risen by about 50 centimeters by the year 2100. He says this will increase flooding and cause some small islands to disappear.
Activity 9, pets. The following passage is about pets. Supply the missing words while listening.
What animals Americans keep as pets? Americans keep many kinds of animals as pets, including dogs, cats, birds, horses, snakes, and fish. Other pets are not as common. Unusual pets can cause unusual problems. A few years ago, police in a California city went to investigate screams coming from a house. What they found was not the kind of family fight they expected. The family's large pig was being attacked by another family pet. The most common American pets are dogs and cats. Americans now own more cats than dogs. Cats are especially popular with people who live in cities. Cats are easier to care for than dogs. They can live comfortably in small living spaces. Dogs were more popular when there was a lot of open land where they could run and play. This year, what may be the most popular pets in America are not real. They are toys known as virtual pets. They are seen on an extremely small computer screen. Each toy shows a picture of a cat, dog, monkey, or space creature. The virtual pet must be cared for by its owner, who pushes buttons on the device to feed it or clean it. The pet makes a beeping noise when it needs such care. The virtual pet grows larger on the computer screen as its owner meets its needs. If the owner does not do this, the virtual pet dies. This has caused problems in millions of American homes as schools refuse to permit the toy pets in class. Some parents take care of the pets while their children are in school. Others refuse. They say that if the virtual pet dies before the child gets home, pushing a few buttons will bring it back to life.